Welcome to the AWS podcast, hosted by Simon Alicia and Simone Brunazze. This is your regular update of new services, interviews, deep dives, and technical tips. If you'd like to share your feedback, please use the Twitter or email links available at aws.amazon.com/podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the AWS podcast. This is episode number 45. My name's Simon Alicia, Principal Solution Architect here in Melbourne, Australia. And with me, as ever, is my illustrious colleague, Simone Brunazze. Hello, Simone.
Hello, Simon. Going? Very good to hear from you. So this is Simone Brunazze, Senior Technology Evangelist for Amazon Web Services, based in San Francisco, California. Today, this is episode 45, and we are going to have a deep dive on autoscaling. Is that correct, Simon?
Absolutely. Autoscaling, one of my most fun capabilities of AWS, and something that brings a huge amount of value to our customers, and certainly something that warrants its own deep dive episode. So if you like the deep dive episodes, this is one for you. If you're not such a fan of the deep dive episode, please feel free to fast forward. But autoscaling is what we'll be talking about today. So Simone, do you want to maybe give us a little introduction of what autoscaling is?
Sure, of course. So autoscaling is a feature related to Amazon EC2, virtual servers on demand. And autoscaling allows you to scale your Amazon EC2 capacity up or down automatically according to conditions that you define. Actually, we should specify one thing. When we say up or down, some purists, they would say you should say out or in, because there are two ways to scale. One way is to scale horizontally, which means you add more machines, more virtual servers. And then you can scale up, which means the same machine or the same set of machines, you make them bigger. So instead of having a small machine, you go to a large and an extra large. And auto-scaling for Amazon EC2 is about horizontal scaling. You can also scale vertically on Amazon EC2, but that doesn't involve auto-scaling. You can do it using the APIs. You can do it using the management console. But the auto-scaling we're going to talk about today is about having 5 machines now, going to 20 machines, then going down to 8, then going to 50, etc., according to conditions that you define. Is that a good definition, Simon?
Absolutely. And really, one of the key elements when you're scaling in this way, and this is a key tenet of distributed systems design, is that the servers within each of the tiers that you're auto-scaling need to be stateless, or as stateless as possible. They need to not be specific in any way. They need to be easily reproducible so that you can create and remove these nodes as and when you need to. And this gives you immense power when it comes to things like performance management, to resilience against failure, etc.
I think, so, Simon, sorry to interrupt. I think it's a good thing to do if we can give a couple of examples of services that would be stateful, and then they should become stateless in order to take advantage of auto-scaling. For example, what about if I have web servers? What would I do to be able to use auto-scaling effectively?
Yeah, so web servers are typically a common candidate for auto-scaling. And to be stateless, they need to not have any specific configuration that needs to be done to them to get them working that can't be automated and be general. You typically wouldn't store, for example, server-side cookies or anything like that on that particular server, so that a user could connect to any particular server in the auto-scaling group and get exactly the same result. So you may push state off to a state service or a back-end database or some other mechanism that hosts any stateful information, whereas the multitude of services that you're building in your auto-scaling group are all interchangeable with one another.
Yeah, this is an interesting point. Actually, it's also, I think, important to highlight why moving to a stateless system is actually better also for the availability of your applications. Because sometimes people say, well, you know what, I will just run everything on this very powerful machine and I don't want to deal with stateless things. I want to just do things the way I used to up until now. The problem is, if you're using a very powerful system that is just alone by itself, that is by definition a single point of failure, which means maybe very unlikely, but if anything happens to that particular machine or even that particular data center where the machine is running, then your application is in trouble, will not be available, might take a long time to recover, etc. And at Amazon, we actually have a very specific approach to distributed systems. We actually say one of the tenets of distributed architectures is that failure happens, everything fails all the time, which means you have to just assume that the individual components can fail and will eventually fail, especially when you are at large scale. When you have hundreds of servers, you have to assume that one of those servers sooner or later will fail. And then when it happens, if you have a stateless architecture in which essentially either with or without auto-scaling, you can easily replace that missing machine with another machine without worrying about losing sessions, losing cookies, losing data on that machine, etc., you are essentially resilient to failure. And you can also run across multiple data centers without worrying too much about, again, states, about information that you save on those machines.
It is also very important so that the system administrator can sleep soundly at night and you don't actually have to do anything, because auto-scaling looks after the health of the farm. And you get up in the morning, you see what happened, and if things happened, you can analyze them, but your customers have still had a great experience.
Yeah, exactly. So, Simon, would you like to run through a common web application scenario and how auto-scaling would play in this scenario?
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit about how the construct of auto-scaling works. So when you have auto-scaling, you categorize your EC2 instances into what are called auto-scaling groups. And this is for the purpose of instance scaling and management. And you create an auto-scaling group by defining the minimum, maximum, and optionally the desired number of running EC2 instances that the group must have at any point in time. Your auto-scaling group uses a launch configuration to launch EC2 instances. So this launch configuration has the information about what you want to launch. So it will give you, for example, the Amazon machine image, the instance type, key pair information, the security groups it belongs to, the block device mappings, etc. Then once you have your launch configuration and your auto-scaling group, you create what's called a scaling plan for your auto-scaling group. And a scaling plan, funnily enough, tells auto-scaling when and how to scale. You can create a scaling plan based on the occurrence of specific conditions, so this is called dynamic scaling, or you can create a plan based on a specific schedule, so time-based scheduling. And auto-scaling starts by launching the minimum number or the desired number of EC2 instances and then starts executing the scaling plan. So, for example, if your scaling plan includes dynamic scaling, then when the conditions that you specified are met, the auto-scaling group will either scale out by adding additional instances until the maximum number is reached, or it will scale in by terminating EC2 instances until the number of EC2 instances equals the minimum number of specified instances. What about scheduling?
Yeah, sure. Instead, if you don't want to use, for example, CPU load or disk load or other parameters to decide when to scale, but you want to scale based on a time schedule, for example, then you can launch additional instances or terminate some of the running instances at the scheduled time. So typical example would be if you have a fairly predictable workload. For example, let's say you run a web operation that has most of its customer in the US. Therefore, at 7:30, 8 a.m. in the morning, you start seeing some growth in traffic. Traffic keeps growing steadily throughout the day, and then it fades out at 9 or 10 p.m. in the evening, which means you know exactly that pretty much every day or every working day or the week or every weekend, whatever, you need maybe 10 machines at night. Maybe you need 20 or 25 during the day, and you don't think you need to do anything else, for example, using CPU load or traffic to decide when to scale, but you just say, you know what, I want to have those 10 machines at night, and then I want those machines to become 20 or 25 at 8 a.m. in the morning and stay like that until 8 p.m. at night. And that's one example of a time schedule for auto-scaling.
Yeah, it's also really good to use the time scheduling when you have specific events that you're planning for. So maybe you've got a marketing event or you're getting some press coverage, and you know that it's hitting television at 7 p.m., so maybe at 6:30 you scale up like crazy. take the wave of traffic and then scale down.
Yeah, actually, a good example, I see this happen all the time with startups that I meet here in the Bay Area. Usually when they have a big launch or like either the launch of the product itself or a new version, they usually know that it might be challenging for the existing infrastructure to keep up with new signups, for example. So they usually use auto-scaling to schedule some 100, 200, 300 machines in advance, just in case. And the thing is, even if you don't need those machines at the end, even if your launch has not been as successful as you hoped for, you just need to use it for a few hours maybe, and then you can wind down to a more stable number of machines. So even if you're going to pay for maybe hundreds of machines, you can do it just for a few hours, just to see what happens with new signups and subscribers. And then once things are more stable, you can then somehow revert back to a normal operation mode. And this is also true for Facebook games, for example, which can be very, very viral in adoption if they are the right things that people want.
Exactly. And it's important to remember when you're using auto-scaling, it's kind of like using the thermostat on a heating system where you're setting the temperature you want to get to and you're not managing the process of getting to that temperature. So people often struggle with the concept of saying, well, I'm setting a minimum and a maximum and some rules, and then I don't go in and fiddle with the instances themselves. They just spring to life automatically and you let it do its thing and it will get to the point that you want. Now, of course, you control the minimums and the maximums, so you're not going to spend more money than you want to, and you're not going to have this army of servers out there that you didn't plan on having. You're still always in control. Now, one of the interesting things I want to talk about with you today, Simone, is the termination of these instances, because there are some really interesting nuances of how we terminate instances using the policies and when they take place.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree, very important. So first of all, the default termination policy essentially uses three simple steps to identify an instance to terminate. So first of all, within the selected availability zone, the termination policy identifies the instance that was launched using the oldest launch configuration. Autoscaling calls the describe launch configuration action on the instances in an autoscaling group, and then uses the time that is stored in the created time field to identify the instance with the oldest launch configuration. If there are more than one running instance which were launched using the same old launch configuration, it identifies the instance within that subset that is closest to the next instance hour. This is actually something amazing. Let me describe why we do this. Since I'll give you an example. Imagine I've launched two machines 3 months ago, and then now I need to terminate one of those machines. Imagine that those machines, as you know, are billed by the hour. Imagine every 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m., every exact hour we bill you for one extra hour. And let's say that one of those machines is very close to the end of the billed hour, so it's very close to charging you another hour. The other one has 40 minutes left. At Amazon Web Services, we want to save you money, so we pick the one that is so close to billing you for another hour. So essentially, instead of stealing 2 minutes of your time, sorry, instead of stealing 40 minutes of your time with the other one, we steal only 2 minutes or 1 minute of your time with the right one. So we do this to actually save you money.
Exactly. So it's all about minimizing the impact, which is really important. And that's why with...
And sorry, one last step. If there are more than one instance that are very close to the next instance hour, at that point, we just select it randomly. There is no other way to help our customers, so we just say, okay, whoever...
Got to make a decision at some point, don't we? One of the other things I like that's really powerful about termination policy is that you don't just have to use the default policy, because people have different use cases that make sense to them. So let me walk you through some of the other ones that we have. The options that we have are the oldest instance, so simply get rid of the oldest one that I have running, which is often useful if you want to keep your farm fresh, if I can use it in that terminology. You may choose to terminate the newest instance. So this is the one that was last launched. So you just may decide that you just want to maintain your older farm if you like. You can terminate, as we said, the oldest launch configuration. So this is the one that was the launch configuration that belonged to the autoscaling group that is the oldest one, because you can update them over the lifetime. Then you can choose closest to next instance hour. So again, to what Simone was talking about, focusing fundamentally on cost optimization to make sure you're maximizing your spend value as well. And you can choose to specify these policies as a standalone policy, or you can even use multiple policies in an ordered list, and they operate in the order specified. So this gives you a lot of power over how you manage your fleet.
Yeah, one thing that we want to mention as well, which you know might be useful for our listeners to know, is that, of course, normal termination happens when, for example, you are running 20 instances and based on your policy, you are now supposed to run only 15 of them, so we have to terminate 5 of them. But we also can terminate unhealthy instances as well. So if we realize by checking the metrics with CloudWatch that one particular machine or group of machines is not behaving correctly, is somehow having health issues, then we might decide to terminate those and, of course, re-instantiate new ones in that case. So imagine we have 20 machines running. Imagine that one of them has health issues. We can terminate that one and then launch a new one, because you still want to have 20 machines based on your policy. So we can just replace the faulty one with a fresh new one.
Exactly. You can even go so far, and this is just a little trick, is you can even have a autoscaling group with a minimum of one and a maximum of one. So you always have one node running, which is useful in a case where you just want the one node running. But autoscaling is really powerful, because as part of the autoscaling group configuration, you can specify one or more availability zones across which the specified capacity will be equally spread. And naturally, we recommend that you use at least two availability zones, if not more, if you have them available to you in the region that you're operating in, and allow autoscaling to balance the workload across those availability zones. This gives you great resilience in the event of some sort of service disruption in an AZ.
Yes, actually, this is, I would say, my default configuration for autoscaling. Whenever I want to run even a simple service for maybe a few weeks, and I want to make sure it's highly resilient, I put the minimum and maximum to two, both of them. And of course, I span across two availability zones. Sometimes I even use micro instances. Maybe I have something very small and simple to do. But it's really incredible to think of the resiliency and the availability you get just from two simple micro instances and auto scaling across two availability zones. It's quite incredible if you think about it.
Exactly. Now, one thing our listeners might be thinking of is saying, well, gee, it sounds like there could be a lot of propagation of instances, and I've now got lots of different instances that are being created and destroyed on their own. How do I keep track of all this? And the good news is that you can use autoscaling group tags to organize your autoscaling resources and give you additional information around your group. So things like software version, role, location information, etc.
Yeah, we have to admit that this was a very, very common request from customers. I kept hearing about this all the time, essentially. And I have to actually thank the service team, because they came out with this feature relatively quickly. So it was a good example of listening to customer feedback and acting very quickly to satisfy them.
Absolutely. And the autoscaling group tags work in a similar way to the standard tags that we have for other resources, where you can do search, you can group them, you could filter them. The tags each have a key and value that can be modified. And you can also remove your autoscaling group tags at any time as well. The other nice thing is you can propagate your autoscaling group tags, of course, to the Amazon EC2 instances launched by autoscaling. So the autoscaling group tags that you propagate to EC2 can be used like any other EC2 instance tag. So you can use this for things like cost allocation, detailed billing, etc. So when you use the propagate at launch flag with the ascreate or update tags command, the tag you create will be applied to new Amazon EC2 instances launched by the autoscaling group. Likewise, when you modify a tag, the updated version will be applied to new instances launched by the autoscaling group after the change. So you can imagine some very, very powerful things you can do with this technology.
Yes, and one last thing that we have to mention before we end this podcast is how to shut down your autoscaling process. I would like you to describe it, Simon, but before that, I just want to say this. I remember very vividly the first time I was just playing with autoscaling. It was, I think, a month before it came out. I was, of course, using the private beta version of it. As you know, as an Amazonian, we have those privileges. And I remember that at some point I wanted to shut it down. And for some reason, I don't know, I did something wrong. I wasn't able to, and I had those 10 machines that kept running. I tried to terminate them manually, and of course, they would spin up again, because if autoscaling says the minimum is 10, if you shut down those machines manually, autoscaling will think, oh, something unhealthy happened to those machines. Let me spin up another 10 machines. So actually, I was paying a 10 instance hour every time I was terminating all of those machines, and then I saw another 10 machines coming. So I think it's important for customers to know exactly what to do to shut down auto scaling, especially if they are just playing with it, and then they realize, okay, I want to stop it. I want to, go have a drink. I don't want to, use it AWS for today, but they want to make sure they don't pay any extra. So it is very important to understand what to do in order to essentially stop autoscaling from running EC2 machines.
Absolutely. So again, this is the setting the thermostat, not trying to run the heater type analogy. So the way you shut it down is you follow these steps. You update your autoscaling group by specifying zero for your maximum, minimum, and desired number of instances. Once you do that, autoscaling will go through the process of terminating all the instances using the normal processes using your termination policies. Then you can delete the autoscaling group. Then you can delete the launch configuration. And then you can delete the CloudWatch alarms. So that way you've cleaned up your environment. New instances won't pop up arbitrarily and they'll all go away. Now, something to be aware of is you don't have to delete your autoscaling groups either. You can turn them off or turn off the policy activation as well. So you could choose to kind of hibernate them, or we call it suspend the activity on the autoscaling group. Now, Simone, before we wrap up, there's probably a few common questions that we get around autoscaling that I think we should run through. Did you want to talk a little bit about tuning of the alarms?
Yes, good point. So from experience, it's very important to decide which alarms will trigger autoscaling in a timely fashion. And just as an example, if you're using CPU load as a trigger for your autoscaling to spin up new machines or terminate some of those machines. A good trigger could be, for example, CPU load beyond 75% for 5 minutes. Instead of using something a little bit too extreme, like CPU load beyond 90% for 10 minutes. That's actually something that would probably almost never happens, even if your actual infrastructure might be under too much workload. So you want to make sure that you don't go to the extreme. You pick a very reasonable threshold in order to decide to spin up additional machines, especially if the number of machines is very low. So, for example, if you have only 2 machines right now across 2 availability zones, a CPU load of 75% or beyond is probably a good threshold. If you have 100 machines running, maybe you can even adventure to the 80% or 85%, because it's a more stable environment, so it's probably more reasonable to use those thresholds. But if you have a few machines, make sure that you you use something, maybe 75% is the good threshold.
Exactly, and we can always test all this, because, of course, we all do good performance testing, don't we? We do scalability testing. Well, in the cloud, there's no excuse not to do it. And it means that you know exactly how your application will respond under workload. Another important thing is to understand how long it takes to start excuse me, each new instance. Because if it takes too long to start a new EC2 instance, you might need to, quote-unquote, bake more code into your Amazon machine image rather than doing runtime bootstrapping. Typically, a good rule of thumb is if it's taking more than a couple of minutes to get the instance up and running, etc., you probably want to make it a little bit more pre-baked for the scaling activity to take place.
Yeah, makes sense. One other important point is that if you enable EC2 termination protection, which is a feature that allows you to somehow protect EC2 from being terminated accidentally, actually that one does not apply to auto-scaling instances.
That's correct. It's the flag. The flag is not on it, so even if you turn it on, it will still get terminated. So to avoid disappointment, just be aware of that. Also, in terms of shutting down instances, when a instance is terminated by auto-scaling, it can't be assured to be graceful, if I can put it that way. So you want to think of it like a power-off event. Is the type of thing that you're getting there. So a good practice is not to rely on sort of exit scripts to do things, rather to, again, expect that stateless behavior. If the stuff you need to get off the machine, it should be coming off in a constant basis. So, for example, log rotation off to S3 should be happening all the time.
Should customers use auto-scaling and elastic load balancing together necessarily?
Elastic load balancing and auto-scale are fantastic friends, if you like, in terms of services. But you don't need to use them together. In fact, we have a great reference case of using auto-scaling with simple queuing service to trigger the workload, the scaling, and also the consumption that's in the documentation as well. So you don't need to use these both together. They are complementary, but don't assume that one is tied to the other. The nice thing with the auto-scaling, though, is auto-scaling will automatically register instances with the ELB when they spin up. So there's a nice sort of coherence between the two of them. And what about economics, Simone? We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a good point. So there are two more things to mention. One is about the economics of scaling. So it's very important to choose the optimal instance size for essentially scaling those machines and having the right number of machines, the right type of machines. And remember that you can test it very easily. So you can always update your launch configuration if you, for example, start with medium machines and then you realize that you want to use large instead. And of course, those machines have different price performance values. So some of them might be better for your web servers. Some others might be better for your databases. Of course, you can have different auto-scaling groups together. So you can scale the web servers in one way, and you can scale, not the databases, of course, maybe other types of machines.
The app servers, for example.
Yeah, the app servers, for example. So you can always update your launch configuration to just essentially follow your whatever your test suggests. And one last thing that we should mention, Simon, is AWS OpsWorks. If you essentially have an infrastructure that automatically scales, easy to configure with elastic load balancing, etc., but maybe you don't, either you're not technical enough to deal with those little things, it's actually very easy, but maybe you're scared off and you want to start with something even simpler than that, or if you want to have something that it's managed by itself, you might want to take a look at AWS OpsWorks. It's one of the services that we recently launched, and it essentially has auto-scaling incorporated in it. So once you configure the number of machines that you want, auto-scaling will be taken care of automatically. And it's also it also has a graphical interface for configuring it, which the normal auto-scaling for EC2 doesn't have yet. So you might want to take a look at that if auto-scaling for some reason is either...
Exactly. Actually, that's a good. That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point, Simone. Is one thing when people are getting started with auto scaling, they always say to me, "I went to the GUI and I couldn't find it." And currently in the AWS console, it's not visible in there. So if you're getting started with auto scaling, use the getting started guide, and you'll either be using the command line tools, or you can use the API as well, or the software development kits. So it's just one of those services that's not currently in the GUI. Certainly, we plan to have it in there, but at the moment, the command line is your friend.
Nice. I think it's the end of this episode. It's almost half an hour, so it's probably long enough. So
time to wrap it up.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you very much for listening. We hope that you find this episode very useful. of course, you can reach out to us. How can they do that, Simon?
Yeah, a couple of ways. Via email, awspodcast@amazon.com, or on Twitter at @awspodcast. We love getting your feedback, good, bad, or in the middle. Let us know what's working for you, what's not, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like to see less of. And of course, please do share the podcast with your colleagues and friends. Let them know it's out there, because hopefully it's bringing value to a lot of people.
Nice. Thank you very much, Simon. It's been a great pleasure as always. And goodbye, everybody. Arrivederci.
Always great to talk. See you later, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. We love getting your feedback, so please contact us on Twitter at @AWSPodcast or via email awspodcast@amazon.com. Theme music provided under Creative Commons by Miles Rogers, audiofarm.org/audiophiles/22275.